meeting that you're in the...
Yeah, Lake Shore, right down at the office.
Okay, okay.
No.
Got it.
You can have it, I got an extra.
Who did that?
You ready, Harold?
Yes, we're ready.
All right, meeting. Monday, March 8th, Chicago State Board of Trustees Facilities Committee is hereby called to order. Ms. Will, did you post notice of meeting?
Yes, I did. The roll call?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Here.
Trustee Rozier?
Here.
Trustee Morrison Butler?
Here.
Trustee Finney?
Here.
Facilities update?
Yes, good afternoon. I'm here, so I'm trying to be as concise. I'm sorry. I'm Mike Orr, Director of Facilities. But I'd like to move right on into the agenda here that's set forth in the trustee's book. One of those being the language change for capital improvements. We have before the board various resolutions here, mainly the legislative language changes for capital improvements. And while we're requesting those changes there so that we can direct funding that was originally indicated for new construction, but we're going to redirect those funds into some of our deferred maintenance there. It's obvious that we can read these things as to what we're changing here, one of them being the project 814010063, whereas that was formerly the project childcare building, but now we're going to go with an addition to an existing facility. So that is the reason for the change in that language there. Going back to project 814010062, where we had originally been appropriated for construction of a conference center, then now we're taking this to be for renovations to laboratories and campus infrastructure improvements. That is essentially the resolution that we have before the board for those particular three projects. If I may move on, if there are no questions to those resolutions, I'd like to move on.
Before you do, Mike, could you just specify what some of those capital improvements would be?
Some of them essentially, as indicated here, will be for re-roofing work, abatement work that's necessary, specifically for the education building. We'll be putting in new roadways that will be for the accessing of the childcare center at the southwest end of the campus there. In terms of the abatement work, because we can't move forward with abating the material that is underneath the supporting structure to the roof without disturbing it, we have to, of course, abate that portion of the building in order for us to put the new roof on the building. This is work essentially is emergency work right now because we're trying to move ahead with issues of protecting our capital assets, but at the same time being restricted by the movement due to a process that CDB adheres to. So we have prevailed upon CDB to assist us in this regard. They have complied. We have had CDB come up from Springfield, give an assessment of the roof situation. We've also talked with their consultants in terms of looking at the abatement, the scope of abatement. That has also been done as of last Thursday. And now it looks as though we're in a position to move ahead with them now creating the construction documents that will allow for addressing abatement and roof. And that's the nutshell of the resolution that we have for legislative changes now. Are there any questions in that regard?
Mike, how soon would that be?
Right now, speaking to CDB on Friday, they're already in motion now. When you're asking how soon would that be in terms of the actual physical start, I would estimate that to be anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks. And that's owing to making and preparing all of the necessary project construction documents before it can go to bid. And because we're going to bid on an emergency project, we do not have to wait for the more protracted program that is normally put in place there. We are able to move quicker with, and also because we limit the number of bidders there, and That's something that you normally can't do if you do it under any other normal capital improvement procedure.
Any interruption in class in that building?
It will probably be an interruption owing to the fact that the third floor has to be abated. And owing to the way that EPA and also the state mandates how these projects are addressed, and also the air quality that's at risk there, there will probably be some relocations. As you may or may not know, we had some 6 to 7 classrooms that were affected by uncontrolled water infiltration. And these are the areas that are basically still going to be impacted by the abatement process. So in answer to your question in short, yes, there will be the necessity to relocate some of these classrooms and the personnel that would be within those spaces.
But it's already disrupted anyway.
It is in a minor way. What we've done is we've just put temporary safeguards in place to protect our computers, our desks, our papers. So we've created Bisqueen tents, if I may, and that's nothing more than just a plastic separation that we lay over everything at night, just because we're experiencing snow melt now and we're now starting to head into rainy season.
And then do we, this may be a provost question, but do we have space if we have to move them off that third floor?
Well, I'm not so involved with how we relocate classroom space. Again, I think you indicated that would be more appropriate for the provost.
Right now, okay, the third floor is comprised not only of classroom space, but also administrative space. And we have not worked out the fine details because we know we'll have to do it in phases. But definitely, we know they will have to be relocated.
And the provost brings up a great point about doing this in phases, because what we've tried to do is isolate the most severe areas. Now, what we've done is we've taken a stopgap measure to put on temporary patching so that we can retard the wholesale run of everybody having to evacuate from the third floor.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Is Trustee James, is this the building that you were referring to earlier in an earlier presentation where students were not, well, maybe it wasn't you. I'm just trying to make sure that we addressing the student issue as it relates to water infiltration. Is this the building that that is the conversation on the campus or what?
No, I don't think so. My question was dealing with business health science.
No, Coach, if it wasn't you, then it was. But then the question that I have in my mind is, to what degree are we addressing the problem of classrooms not being available and or classrooms leaking where students are supposed to be? Is this particular prophylactic or this particular manner of handling the roof and or the tents, is this addressing the students as well?
Well, I think it addresses the environment, and as a byproduct, the students are addressed as well. If we don't take this prophylactic approach, as you just expressed, to minimize any type of uncontrolled water infiltration, we would have a problem. This procedure helps us twofold. It helps us in the short term while we're waiting for the full-blown project to become initiated by the state, and it helps us in the long run in that you'll have a 30-year resolution to that one issue, uncontrolled water infiltration. What it's going to essentially boil down to is, what method of roofing do we elect to employ on our roofs now? We've done 4 roofs campus-wide so far. These roofs are normally running you somewhere in the area of $350,000, say on average. And that also includes all of your sheet metal copings. So does that answer your question, sir?
Yeah, I think it's getting there. I just want to make sure that as we move forward from a student sensitivity point of view, that it's one thing to address the equipment, but it's another thing to make sure that we're dealing with the students and to make sure that they are in an environment free of water infiltration. And that's it for that line of question. I think I have the answer. Secondarily, with respect to the roofing, are you using modified bitumen? Or are you using Goodyear or Firestone rubber? Are you torching down, or what are you doing?
Well, that's what I was speaking to when I said it's up to us to finally resolve what type of system do we want to use. Of course, you know, with the modified bitumen, we ended up with a greater mill thickness. We do not end up with the longevity of the roof if we went to an EPDM, if we went to a trochel, if we go back to a ballasted system. I do not like ballasted roofs anymore because it makes it too hard to identify the roof.
Right.
What areas that leak. In addition to that, any degradation of the ballast only enhances its ability to compromise the roof skin.
Right.
So we want to stay away from that. Now, of course, normally we cannot afford to go with a trochel system.
Right.
The trochel is a fully rubberized roof system.
Yep.
But normally we can't afford that.
Well, absolutely. What are you talking about per roof and square? How much does it cost?
Per square, I don't want to hazard a guess at what trochel is going for now. The last one I did was for soft stream products, and we paid, I think, in essence, about $400,000 for that roof.
Mm-hmm. How many square feet?
That was roughly, I want to say maybe 66,000 square feet, which would compute to 660 squares.
Okay, so you're about $100. Okay, so, but the bottom line is that we have to have a system that A, will deal with the water infiltration, but B, will not bust the budget. Right?
That is correct, sir.
So you're gonna, your options are gonna be the lower end of EPDM or a modified bitumen, right?
Or somewhere in that area there. Because again, we have to deal with the copings as well. So we got to find a coping system that's compatible with the roof itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But again, in the final analysis.
How serious is the deterioration of the coping?
Oh, the copings, we have stone copings right now. What we're doing is you got to create receivers to handle the membrane itself.
Right.
So as we've done on the previous roofs, if you look around the tops of most of these buildings, mm-hmm. you're going to find that we've gone to a metal coping
right.
with a powder, basically a powder-coated coping.
Mm-hmm.
But we use that same coping also as part of our receiver,
mm-hmm.
and then we counterflash out from under that.
Mm-hmm.
So we essentially end up with a much tighter membrane throughout the entire roof.
Even if you went with a modified?
Even if you went with a modified.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Any other questions? Is there a motion?
I move it. I guess I did all the talking.
Is there a second?
A second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee James?
Yes.
Trustee Morrison Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Finney?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
As you all are aware, the university is currently inside a conversation about whether to add residence hall space. And to help us with that conversation is nationally recognized bond counsel Susan Langford from the law firm of Peck and Schaefer. The resolution that the action item on the agenda is a resolution to move forward with a feasibility study. And what this feasibility study will do is to determine, let us know what the needs are, what the capacities are, how much it's going to cost us, and student support for this initiative. Can I
impose just for a moment, because I have not done a market study, but I sat on the for this possibility of an expansion of our dormitory. But it occurred to me, having spent 31 years on the Chicago Plan Commission, and to appreciate what other universities have done with respect to large plans for expansion and to move from commuter to residential, that it would be important for us to at least explore the possibility of expanding our residential facilities. And I had a conversation with the president prior to him assuming the presidency. And I said to him then, and I say to the full board and to everybody here, if we could get another 1,000 or so rooms, we might become more competitive with another sister university on the near west side, the University of Illinois, where I watched that particular campus expand from where it was, the University of Illinois, a Navy Pier, to the Circle campus, to no residential facilities. Then it sort of expanded. And as it has expanded, the university has become stronger. And it's able to attract a broader spectrum of students, people who might want to come from out of state or in state and still be able to locate in this great metropolis. But the other thing that happened was that the area around the University of Illinois materially was affected to the positive, because now you have growth all around the University of Chicago, or University of Illinois, the university campus, and shops and facilities have just blossomed. And what was an old time when I was a kid at 12 Maxwell Street at 12, it was, you know, very kind of seedy commercial. But now that's gone. And down the street we have great stores, Target and Whole Food, and facilities like, when I say down the street, I mean not far away. And while some of the older stores like Manny's are still there providing food, but the important thing is that it became an economic stimulus, as well as addressing the needs of students who may want to be in dormitories and want to have the dormitory life experience. So I'd like to thank the president for moving forward and trying to engage someone who could help us think this through. And I admit, I don't know anything about how to build, or finance for that matter, how to finance and or build dormitories. But I do know that if we could justify building additional dormitories for this school and figure out a way to pay for it, it could be a great boon for this school, and it would help in retention as well as, I believe, in attracting additional students. So that's kind of my opening remark, and I promise not to say very much after this.
So in the interest of the resolution, my questions are, from the study, what decisions will we be able to make from that? Because the resolution is in regards to the study, so I just want to know what the study is going to tell us.
What you want to do in getting information from the study, the point of that is you don't want to build something that, one, you can't fill up with students, two, that the students don't like the mix of units. If you have dorm rooms or student housing that have four students to one suite and one bathroom, and you find your students just don't want that and they're not comfortable with that, and that's what you build, then that doesn't work for you. So your study helps you determine how much you can charge in terms of rent, what will students pay, what will students' parents pay, and for what kind of structure, what kind of mix of rooms, bathrooms and public space. So you want to know what your students are looking for, but you also want to know what you as a university are looking for. There are some student affairs vice presidents who believe if you're talking about a freshman or a first year dorm, you don't want a lot of kitchens. You don't want to build a student housing facility where every apartment has a kitchen in it, because then it takes the brand new students out of the flow of what's going on in campus. So you're hiring what a market study firm will do is talk with the university, understand what the university administration's view is of what do we think we want, and then they will determine what is it that the students will buy, how much can you afford. And of course, once you have those numbers and you know what rent your students will pay, then you know what you can build. Because ideally, what you're doing is building a facility that is self-sustaining, that the revenue from the student rents are going to pay not just your debt service for the cost of constructing the building, but also it's going to cover the operation, the reserves that need to be in place for for the repairs in future years. You'd want to have that all coming out of the revenue stream, so it is not taking away from the university's general revenue stream.
And then we'll speak to anything, I'm sorry, anything on financing options?
The study?
Yeah.
No, the study will not. That's outside of their expertise.
I'm also, and I apologize, but as a new board member, I'm still trying to get up to speed on certain things, and there's always volumes of material, so maybe this has been presented somewhere. I'm trying to see how this fits into an overarching strategy of who we think we're going to be at some point in time. Otherwise, I'm a little nervous about, you know, is this, you know, if we build it, they will come sort of philosophy, or do we, you know, I don't know that, so I apologize.
And one reason why we're looking strongly at dormitories is for two reasons. One, retention. A number of our students, they live in the community. We are a commuter college. And research shows that in especially kind of urban situation we're in, that it can help with our retention of students if we put our students in a controlled learning environment. Okay? So that's first. Second is, it would then attract a different type of students. You know, right now there is a discussion, debate on campus that has been going on for some time as to how we raise or should we raise the minimum level of the students who come into Chicago State. All right. When we get dormitories, we're going to attract a different kind of student. Students who would normally go to other universities will now come to us, because they will have a place where they can live.
And I don't disagree with that. I'm trying to figure out, though, is that anecdotal? I mean, is that anecdotal information, or is that information where there's either proprietary research that we've done on ourselves or secondary research that can support that? I mean, because otherwise, it's like if there is a student attraction strategy, for lack of a better word, then this is one element in a bigger student attraction strategy. So I'm trying to figure out if we're going after different kinds of students, then this one thing alone, I don't know how to rank this. I don't know whether this is the number one thing that students would look for, or is it the number five thing on the list. So I just, and like I said, I know that you probably know it would be helpful to me as a trustee to maybe, and we can do some of this offline, to be able to talk with you about the wealth of information I'm sure you have as to the things that will help new students select Chicago State over other things that they have, and therefore where does this fall on the list.
Also, will this study cover information as to how we develop a campus life outside, I mean, like the exterior components to campus life, like having simply a place to eat off campus, things of that nature? Like, what would we need in order to build a community that would attract those thousand students to that new dormitory, especially when we have a situation where in our current dormitory we have 300 students and we constantly fluctuate with attrition in that facility, as well as with our rising tuition costs and a lack of funding coming from the state in regards to things like Pell Grants and things and MAP grants, you know, not being even sure if that's going to even be there. You'll have issues where students won't be able to pay for room and board, but would be able to pay simply only for tuition. And just understanding that, again, 78% of our population that have children, would this conclude some forms of, you know,
next student?
Well, I see two questions. I think we should give Ms. Langford a chance to answer each individually. I guess the first question to me is, have you seen through the studies you've done in the past where it's made the difference that you've been asked? I guess that's the first question for me. And the second, which is a question I had about infrastructure, obviously you put up, you triple the number of beds you have. Dorms alone won't necessarily be the full attraction. Of course, there's infrastructure outside of that. So I'd invite you to answer those questions individually. Based on your experience?
Well, with respect to question number one and the question that Trustee Butler added, The market study itself is not going to answer all of those questions, and my answers truly are anecdotal.
Okay.
If you look at the work that I have done in various different universities, it really does, again, anecdotally, indicate that it increases the number of students that are involved in the campus. It increases the students coming to the university, and it increases the life and the energy on campus. A good example is, although not in, in Illinois, is a somewhat similar university in Atlanta, Georgia State University, which is an urban university right in the middle of downtown Atlanta, which had never had dorms until the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta. And as part of the Olympic process, a set of dorms were built to house Olympic athletes, and those dorms eventually went to Georgia State. Well, that started a whole sea change at Georgia State, which now has, I don't know how many students they house, but an absolutely incredible number. For example, opening probably 2 years ago was a dorm downtown that I think has 2,000 beds in it for Georgia State. And that was only their most recent dorm, not their only next dorm after the Olympic dorms. So that is definitely anecdotal, but it really changed the character of that university. I think it was very similar in many ways probably to Chicago State as an urban university. And as Trustee Finney said, it actually has also impacted the community around the university. And even though it's right in downtown Atlanta, it created, downtown Atlanta is a downtown that is not like downtown Chicago. Mm-hmm. It's like many other urban areas where it's just doesn't have a lot of retail, doesn't have people there after dark. And the university and the presence of students in the downtown area has made somewhat of a difference in downtown Atlanta. So anecdotally,
and I will request some empirical data, because what Trustee Butler has requested is something that I'm sure the data is out there. Mm-hmm. So we will, you know, ascertain that information is shared with the board members.
Well, because I'm assuming that, for instance, if we decide that as part of a bigger student attraction strategy, that building a new dorm is a really important piece of how we get that done, then supporting the study makes perfect sense. I don't have any problems with the study. I'm a person who believes in getting the outside help in order to make you make the decision. I'm just trying to figure out, in an era where financial resources are so strained, how is it that we're looking at this dorm? Through what broader lens are we looking at the dorm? And so if we could find, and I'm sure there must be out there, I went to Indiana University in Indianapolis, and I know that they went from being a purely commuter school to a school that built a lot of buildings over the last 10 to 20 years and have really seen their enrollment increase. So there has to be secondary information that we could get from similar types of institutions that would help us see this as part of a broader strategy to bring new students to the table. I just, by itself, I don't know if it does what we want it to do, but if it is a part of a bigger thing, then I understand that. Thank you for the anecdotal information about Georgia.
But Trustee Butler, as a part of what the kind of questions you're asking, another thing that the university might decide to do is to take its current master plan and update it.
Yes.
Because if the master plan, depending upon how long ago it was done, and if it doesn't speak to what the university looks like or what you want it to look like 10 years from now in light of the fact that you want to build dorms, you may want to update the master plan, which I think would address some of your questions too, and what is the policy direction that we're going in as a school, and therefore what do we want our campus to look like? I mean, do we want segments of housing here, and we want academic buildings here? Are we going to need new academic buildings in light of the increase in students that the president may see as a result of having dormitories or housing on campus?
Thank you.
Can we talk briefly, because I know that was part of the packet of materials that you provided, the financing options that would be available to the university for paying for this and the implications of the various financing options? Or maybe the top two or three?
There are two broad categories that I would put the financing options in. One would be having, and you all may have been approached by companies like this, firms who come in and say, look, we can do a turnkey job for you. You don't have to put up any money. We will do it all. And I have not worked with those sorts of groups, but what happens in that situation is, in fact, they do come in, they give you what the program will look like, what your facilities will look like, and I imagine you have some input there. But the most important thing to think about with that is, along with that organization putting up all of the resources and all of the equity to get that done, then along with that comes an ownership interest in that equity, in that organization. Mm-hmm. And that organization is then on your campus as an owner of your building. And what that also often will mean is that organization is now managing your building and your facilities for a long time, and probably for the life of the bonds, because they're doing the same sort of public financing with either just a regular bank loan or some sort of financing or bonds. So you still have the long-term debt. But in addition to the long-term debt, you now also have a long-term partner that you can't just look at their contract and say, you are not managing our housing the way we want it managed. And so you're married to them for the life of this project. But that is, in fact, one way of doing it. Another way of doing it, which still, of course, involves long-term debt, is the structure that I personally have been involved with because of my role as bond counsel. And that is simply doing this project yourself. And when I say yourself, you still have lots of professionals involved, and you have, you may decide, and the financing community may tell you, you have to have an outside management of your housing. But even in that situation, the contract is then between your ownership entity and the manager. So perhaps it's a 2-year contract, a 5-year contract, but if they are not doing what works for the university and is not up to the standard of the university, you are in a position then to terminate that contract and say, we're going to do this ourselves, or we're going to bring in a new company. So you have the long-term debt in both situations, but one, you actually have control. So then you have the issue, okay, if we're not doing it with the turnkey company that comes in, how do, maybe we are not in a position to finance or to upfront the cost for this project. That then means you look at various deliveries, or what we call delivery strategies, for your project. In some instances, you bring in, again, a turnkey, or what they call a turnkey developer. But all that means is the developer is front-loading the cost until the bonds are closed. And when the bonds are closed, then the developer is paid back, and your project goes on. But the developer leaves at the end of the construction. You could do a construction manager at risk, where it's a, I don't know if I would call it more difficult, but it is a, it involves more input and more activity on the part of the university to do a construction manager at risk. Because in that situation, you are holding the contract with the architect. And so you are working, you and your students are working directly with the architect to decide what exactly you want the design of your project to be. And then you hire your contractor, who then builds what the architect and you have designed. But even in the developer, when you bring in the turnkey developer who comes in with their project, you're still talking to them about what it looks like. Mm-hmm. And of course, you always have control over the unit mix. Mm-hmm. So even if you are using a turnkey developer, you are still saying to the developer, you're still working with the developer as a result of this study that we've talked about, to decide what your appropriate unit mix is and what your appropriate costs are. I mean, are you building, you know, a student facility that looks like one that would be on a campus that has absolutely no limitation in terms of what the students will pay for their housing? Or are you building something that you realistically believe fits with what your students want to pay and frankly can afford to pay, mm-hmm, for their housing and still have a comfortable experience as a college student. So does that, trustee, does that answer your question?
Yeah. Trustee Butler, okay with that?
I think another thing that's important, if I will also add, you have to get a sense from your investment banker that eventually you'll have to hire also as to, is this feasible? I mean, you have to do the initial market study to determine what should you be building, what can you expect to be successful. And then you have to have a banker who will come in and tell you, okay, well, with this cost and for this structure, let's see what we can expect. What kind of pricing can we expect in the market? What kind of credit enhancement is there? I mean, with all of the changes with the bond insurers and the letter of credit issues, credit enhancement is an issue for any institution. So a lot of things have to happen in parallel as you go forward to ultimately make a decision. Does this make sense for my university?
Right. Thank you. But to take a step back, that will not be involved in the study.
No, right. The market study does not do anything
correct.
With
that. That'll be, once we've seen the study, made a decision, then we talk about financing. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Great.
And the study is not a long process, and sure. It involves getting with your students, just like you were talking about the, I guess it was the UPass study that had 3,000 respondents. That's the kind of response it would be great to have in a market study.
I'm curious, with you mentioned Georgia State and a few others you might have worked with. I'm just curious. Have you seen since or after the fact what that's done to enrollment, retention, revenue?
I do not. At Georgia State?
Yeah, or
I do not know
any
that.
School you've worked with?
I think at some of the smaller universities, the more the universities that are not necessarily urban universities, like Fort Valley, Savannah State, I think what they have found that it certainly does work in terms of attraction. And I think, again, anecdotally, in terms of retention, it has also been a positive.
Great.
But not so much for urban or?
No, I'm just saying I don't know.
Oh, okay. Just okay.
Got it. And will your study be able to tell us that?
No. Again, okay. this study
is based
very
on
narrow.
State. Got it. Can you speak to the infrastructure question that Trustee James had?
Yes. Your question was, okay, if you put all these extra students permanently on campus, then what does that mean? Well, you do have to make certain you have made some arrangements or made some assumptions about eating, for example, your dining hall. Does that mean you have to change the nature of your board packages, your food packages? You may decide that inside, as you're deciding what does this structure need to look like, do you want to have public spaces in the somewhere in the building that include a bookstore, a coffee house, a dining facility? So you would have to have an evaluation of what you currently have on campus. And what does having now a 24-hour campus in a larger way mean we also have to have? So in terms of infrastructure, it really depends on what currently is on campus and what capacity you have to expand that that infrastructure.
So you don't necessarily have to build things that are external to the campus. You can just have it housed all in one place, sort of like a condominium.
That's right, but you also may not need anything else. I don't think you want to start with the assumption that by putting 300 extra students on campus overnight, you know, 24 hours for 300 students, I don't know that you have to assume that there is some sort of infrastructure in terms of construction that you need. Maybe you simply change the offering, the hours of your current facility. You know, maybe the hours of the library changes because now there are people that want to go to the library at 3 o'clock in the morning instead of 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Maybe your dining room doesn't offer as full an array of breakfast, and now you want. And you've mentioned the fact that many of the students on campus, or I guess 70% of the students on campus, or students here, are women. What does that mean in terms of children? What does that mean in terms of what your housing needs to look like? All of that does need to get taken into consideration as part of the study. And those are the questions that they would be asking the students. So, you know, you will work with your marketing firm to decide, you know, let's make sure this study is done for our campus. I mean, these are companies that do this all the time.
Part of that fits into the one concept we discussed earlier, that is the charter school, the child development center. All of that fits in, because if we expand our dormitory offerings, we want, I think it's 72% of our students are female, and I've seen figures from 60+% to 78% of our students have children. All right, as high as 78% of our children, of our students have children. So that's a reality where there may have to be some dormitory facility like they have down at Southern Illinois University, where a single mother can bring her one or two children to college with her. All right, and that's becoming more and more of a reality. Southern Illinois has that. We also must look at graduate dormitories. We are expanding our graduate programs in pharmacology. We have a doctorate program in education. And in the future, we expect to expand even more. That's a graduate need. And graduate students usually do not want to be in a same dormitory with undergraduate students.
Seniors don't either.
Pardon me?
Said seniors don't either.
Ms. Langford, what's the, that'll be study based on the current enrollment?
Yes, it would be.
And then can you just give me a sense of timing?
Studies like that can be done in as quickly as 2 or 3 months. And again, it depends on, you know, who's available at the university to work with the firm, how quickly you engage them, where the students are, and hopefully you're able to do it. If you decide you want to do it now, hopefully you're able to do it far enough ahead of exam time so you can expect students to take the time to actually fill it in, fill out the survey. The company may want to do focus groups with students. And then, of course, they will also need information from the university. What is the current housing cost? Because you want to have some level of comparison, some frame of reference from which to start. Mr. President, I want to also, you said something that, I mean, it's just the sky is the limit as to what you could say. You could end up with a charter school on campus for the student, the children of your students.
And that's,
maybe it makes sense.
Yes.
Trustee Hill. Is this the resolution that we're talking about?
Yes.
Because this resolution to me doesn't say market study. And I'm just confused about, I was listening to what we're being asked to approve, which I think is a market study, but this this talks about hiring bound counsel, talks about drafting plans and construction and a whole bunch of things that I don't think are in the, within the scope of this initial step.
The way I read it, it's exploring plans for all those things. So
okay. What we mean by those plans is this market study.
Correct. Right, that's the exploration. I didn't read it as we're going to do all those things.
Right.
I read it as we're going to explore doing all those things, which equates to the study.
That's the intent of the resolution.
Okay, so the review and drafting of documents related to design, construction, and financing?
I agree with Trustee Hill. It's a little broad, given what the scope of the, what we've talked about right now.
So we'll amend the resolution. This resolution was specifically drafted to address itself to moving forward with the feasibility study. And the feasibility study will provide partial answers, it's my understanding, to some of the questions that have been raised here today. But the only action before this board at this time is the moving forward with the feasibility study and nothing more.
And what is our estimate of the cost for the feasibility study?
Yes.
I think you could expect probably to have that done for about under $50,000. But again, that's different company.
And I guess then I have to ask the question about whether this is the, you know, right now at this time, whether spending $50,000 of money that's so constrained, whether, you know, waiting until we get a little bit better view of what the finances are going to be looking like for the next year.
Was that 50,000?
You got to get started at
50,000,
some point.
50,000, yes.
I think it could be anywhere from 25
to 50,000. 25 to 50,000.
Yes.
Okay.
And then just, last question for me, I just, if you summarize it in a couple bullet points, I just want to know, what's the expectation of the study? And when you do these studies, I mean, what are the two or three ultimate things we're going to be able to see?
To tell you what rent you can expect to charge and what mix of units your students are attracted, are interested in. And the number of beds that you can expect to reasonably build, need to build based on your students' interest.
Any other questions?
Yes. I'm curious. As I've listened to the conversation, seems to me that there are some things that we have to consider. Let's set aside the fact that we don't have any money, which is where Trustee Hill is right now. But maybe to going back to Trustee Butler, in terms of who do we want to be, it may be important and or instructive to think about revisiting our strategic plan that was done some years back. Take a look at it, because it may inform us as to who we thought we wanted to be 5 years ago. And maybe we don't want to be who we thought we were going to be 5 years ago. Maybe we want to be something different for the future. But it seems to me maybe helpful to revisit that that strategic plan. It also seems to me that we need to look at, we've agreed to take hire a marketing firm to help us fulfill, I guess, what we want to be. And it seems to me that that marketing plan for the overall who we want to be and then how we actualize it might well help to inform us in another way what this study, should we choose to go forward with it, might be. Then it seems to me that we need to have a specific market study that's narrowly focused, but in context with a broader sense of what's going on, that informs us as to what the market says. It's one thing to say what a student says, which is important, and a faculty says, which is important. But it's also, what does the market say about, would it be responsive to a planned development for residential accommodations, and under what circumstances, which kind of where you were, how much, what do you, what does it have to look like, and what are the circumstances? And then I think it gets to be maybe the pre-development costs that we have to think about, because there evidently will be some at-risk money that has to be thought about, don't you think? And so the at-risk money might be the $25,000, the $50,000, but it also may be other monies of funds that we have to advance, which is where I think Trustee Hill is sort of drifting towards. And then it seems to me that from there, we need to think about financing, and that's the bank or whoever. And you know, you've got your pre-development that may be at risk. Seems to me then you've got your interim financing that would have to be probably before bond financing or any such financing would kick in. And what would that look like? So it seems to me that we've got several steps to go through in order to get to the point of being able to make a decision as a board of trustees as to what to do. So the real portion, I think, right now is to go back to where Trustee Rozier sort of guided this discussion. What do we need to know in order now, in order to make an informed decision about spending $25,000 up to $50,000? So those are the things that, that I'm pondering as I'm trying to listen to all of the trustees weigh in on this at one at a time. But it seems to me that there's a number of questions that have to be addressed. But I wouldn't want to say, from my little point of view, that we shouldn't make a decision to spend $25,000 or $50,000 because we can't answer all of these questions. But it seems to me that there are a number of questions that need to be addressed, that if we go at it sequentially, I think that we can get to a moment where the facilities chairman and the other board members can say, okay, this looks like it can go.
I mean, I agree with all that, but once again, the resolution before us is purely based on the study. I mean, all those things will come in succession. You know, so my only question for Ms. Langford ultimately is, you know, will this study and spending $25,000 to $50,000 be able to tell us exactly what we need to move forward? I think that's what's before the Board of Trustees today, and that's my biggest question to you, is will we get that information from this study? Because that is a pretty big check to write. So I just want to know that we can make a decision from that study.
You can make a decision about what you think you ought to build in terms of housing. Some of the comments that Trustee Finney is making, I think, has to do with making a decision as to who we are as a university.
Right.
That study is not going to tell you who we are as a university.
Right, understood.
And so, I mean, I suppose you could decide to have parallel
conversations,
things going on to figure out who we are as a university, because your students tomorrow aren't going to be impacted very significantly by, as you're figuring out who you want to be long-term as a university. So you're really not going to end up with a different result from the narrow market study that tells you what your current students today, assuming they are reflective of what you could expect your current students to be next year if you don't make any changes. That's not going to be really changed by the things that Trustee Finney is referring to also need to be done. So I don't want to overstate what this market study is going. This market study assumes Chicago State University wants to build housing for its students on campus. We think we want to house 1,000 students eventually. We want to house, I mean, some universities say they want 60% of their students on campus.
I mean, that's completely understood. And I'm trying to make the point that the resolution is about the study. I'm not asking
that's
you to tell us what
right.
we're going to be in a few words. President Watson, you want to weigh in on that? Because I want to separate the goal of this university and the strategic plan from the resolution of the study. The two separate things at this point. The resolution before us is to go forward with the study. And I don't want to confuse those two things. So if you want to say a few words about what we want to be as a university, please do. If not, I want to get to the resolution.
I would like for us to get to the resolution, but that's similar to some of the questions that Trustee Butler raised earlier. And I think that we may want to do that on a parallel track. It is extremely important. The strategic plan, I've seen two strategic plans in place at Chicago State, and I think that they need to be, that we need to take another look at them to define who we are. Things have changed quite a bit in terms of the landscape.
I think Ms. Langford has done a wonderful job of making sure we all understand what this particular study would do. I do not have a problem with what I think this particular study will accomplish. My question for us as board members is to see the broader thing, because I think we're supposed to do that. And right now, I don't have that broader view. So my original comments were just to say, at least down here from my end, I need information to see this as part of a bigger thing. But I don't have a problem with the study. I absolutely think that it, just from a gut instinct level, from a common sense level, that it makes sense to want to increase the amount of student housing that we have and to get the information that we need in order to do that. So I don't have a problem with that. But I do think that there's a bigger thing here, right, which is, you know, how does this fit in to a broader strategy to attract students? And I just want to make sure that that doesn't go off the table, but I do not want to stand in the way of going ahead and voting today on the resolution, okay?
Yeah, point taken. Any other questions? Is there a motion?
I'm going to move it.
Second?
A second.
Trustee Hill?
Are we going to rewrite it to make it, or are we just going to understand that it's about the...
I'll rewrite it to reflect the conversation that we've had
and
today.
It's just in this half of paragraph
right.
that needs rewritten.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Okay with that, Trustee?
With that, I vote yes.
Trustee James?
Yes.
Trustee Morrison Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Finney?
Yes.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, as a follow-up, I will request my staff that we have a series of meetings with our students, our faculty, our staff, and with our trustees, because I think the question that is parallel, which Trustee Butler has raised, needs to be defined in a very specific way. That needs to be clearly stated. We need to look at some empirical data, you know, gut, anecdotal, and all of that says one thing, but we need to go put something to paper and make sure that this is part of a strategic plan and an understanding that we all have. So I think on a parallel track, we need to do that, and I will commit to do that with the staff and reach out to the board members.
Thank you, sir.
I have a question, an observation. Would you make sure, I'm sure you would, that we don't leave the marketing firm that we just hired out of those discussions, because
yes,
they will have a broader gauge of to be able to complement this other study. So and I don't want us to have a market study going over here and another market
and
plan.
And Chairman Finney, that is, you know, can't see the forest for the trees.
Yes.
You know, we have forgotten the fact that we just hired them, and they can play and will play and shall play such a key role in this one. And I have forgotten about that, Chairman Finney. So thank you for reminding us of what we just...
Ms. Langsford, thanks a ton.
Thank
I actually
you.
Coincidentally was down at Georgia State last week when I was in Atlanta for on business, and what I found interesting was that I didn't know it was a commuter school at one point.
Yes.
And I would hope to have that effect here at Chicago State. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry. The resolution has to be revised and brought back for the full board to vote on it this afternoon, because we're talking about changes.
So you need to come and have your office before.
So do we need to go back?
Yep.
This is right.
Yeah.
Patrick.
Yeah.
Patrick.
Yeah. You can do that.
Yes.
Just take it off.
Okay. Aquaponics. Dr. Banks.
Here. Oh no, no.
Stay there. Stay.
I like the lobby.
Okay.
I heard about everything.
Okay. So, good afternoon. My name is Floyd Banks. I'm the chair of the Department of Biological Sciences here at Chicago State University. And I prepared a little PowerPoint presentation, and I'm going to be open for a lot of discussion about this. But we have initiated a aquaponics. Oh, which one goes forward? This one? Do I have to point this way? Okay, so what is aquaponics? This is a system that would that has been developed, and we were just going to implement it, in which we have fish aquaculture here, and this will be tilapia. It'll be in a circulating tanks, and there'll be four of them, and we take the effluent off of these tanks, and we flow it through a growing bed. And actually, we're going to have we have six growing beds, but there are three tiers. We're only starting off with the lowest tier right now, and so we'll be able to grow plants here. And these plants we will use for a lot of various things that we're developing. And the site is located at 9601 Cottage Grove. Behind there is 5 acres of fallow land, which we intend to use for some of the plants that we have. I'll go through in a minute. And we'll have four 750-gallon tanks to raise tilapia, six grow beds with three tiers, so it'll be 18 altogether, 18 grow beds. And there will be outdoor plots for sustainable fuel research and community gardens. Now, at this site, 9601 Cottage Grove, Dr. Akujese is developing hydrogen fuel cells, an alternative energy. And what we'd like to evolve into is a situation where we will be growing out on this 5 acres. Part of it, we'll be growing things like fodder beets, and use those fodder beets to make gasohol, alcohol, that would run we want this whole thing to be sustainable. So
what kind of beets you said?
Fodder beets.
Okay. B-E-T-S?
Yeah, they get to be this big. Not like the beets that you are accustomed to.
Not like the beets that I don't like to eat.
Right.
You don't like to eat beets? No, we have to work on that.
But
let me tell you, the stuff that we grow in the aquaponics, everybody likes to eat it, because it is the best vegetables you will ever eat is coming out of aquaponics.
I'm going to have to learn how to eat pizza, trust me.
We'll work on it. Okay, so we want to look at some of the academic outcomes, and the point that we want to make is we're not trying to make this into a vocational school or anything like that, but there's a lot of pedagogies that can develop off of this, and we want to include the community, a lot of different departments, which I'll go through in just a minute, but we want certain things like pharmacological investigative medicinal plants. I've already been approached by two investigators from the School of Pharmacy. One was Melody Pugassi, and she wants to amplify the pharmaceutical agents inside the plants by doing experiments on that. And we're, you know, that sounds good to us. We're going to do it hydroponically and on the 5 acres that I've already asked Mike Orr, and he's been very wonderful to us in developing this project. And until they start building something over there, we'd like to use the land to cultivate crops that we could use in our aquaponics project. So, like I said, sustainable alternate fuel research. We want to be part of that effort, and we want to expand our environmental biology option here at CSU. Now, we have in biology department one of the options is the environmental option, but it's the least populated part of our biology option, and we have 250 students in our department majors. So what we're thinking about is we'd like to involve high school students and get them on a track where they can come in for urban environmental studies. Right now, in the urban environment, there's a lot of pollution and things that go on. It's not being addressed. On the fly dumping, making the environmental situation not palatable for those people that live there. And we'd like to address that. Now, this, of course, involves the Department of Geography, and one of the experts in the nation on food deserts is Danny Block, and he's already signed on. He wants to be part of this effort. And so we would have a interdisciplinary approach this, and we've already had different departments sign on, and I just had a conversation with the new interim dean of the business school, and he wants to come on and help us create a business plan because we want this thing to be self-sustaining. I don't know if we're gonna make money out of it, but hopefully it'll pay for itself. That would be good if we could do that, if we could make money, but that's, you know, that might be a stretch. So partners in
I would say stretch it.
we'll do the best we can, okay? I'm not proud.
Fish fry.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, we have plans in the mix, but we'll have to see how that works out, because, you know, it's one thing to say it and it's another thing to do it. You know, the fish, I don't know if you ever aquaculture tilapia, but it's very good fish. And they say if you like, what's the one that they have over at the, the one that they use at the Muslims have. Yeah, if you like whiting, you like this much better, okay.
If you like what?
Whiting.
Whiting. The Muslims came up with whiting fish that they were getting out of Peru and around it.